Coming up on Tech News Today, how is Microsoft making money? Do you hate those Instagram ads? And Comcast is bundling HBO with the internet. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Friday, October 25th, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by Shutterstock.com. With over 28 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and video clips, Shutterstock helps you take your creative projects to the next level. For 25% off your new account, go to Shutterstock.com and use offer code TNT1013. And by RingCentral. We do everything in the cloud. That's why we love our cloud-based phone system by RingCentral. Zero startup costs, and RingCentral is $20 a month per user. Try it now with a 30-day risk-free trial. Buy one desk phone, get a second phone free, up to 20 phones. Call 800-543-9980 or visit RingCentral.com and use our promo code TWIT. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Maya Zaka.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And I'm going to resist using a food metaphor this time to talk about how we bring you tech news, starting with the news feeds. Microsoft earnings for its first fiscal quarter certainly must have cheered things up around the Redmond campus. Revenue rose 16% over last year to $18.529 billion U.S. Operating income rose 19% to $6.334 billion. Earnings per share was up 17% to 62 cents a share. Microsoft introduced new reporting. They've divided the company now into devices and consumer, which covers OEM, Windows, retail software, Xbox, Windows Phone, and the like, and a commercial division, which covers pretty much their enterprise stuff, sales of Windows and Office to big businesses, along with cloud offerings like Azure. The commercial division led the way in the increase, although sales of Surface tablets and Xbox 360s bolstered the DNC division.
Deutsche Telekom wants German communications companies to help shield local internet traffic from foreign intelligence services. This proposal comes after Germany said it had evidence that Chancellor Angela Merkel's mobile phone had been monitored. Internet experts say it won't work when Germans surf on websites hosted on servers abroad. That would be like Google or Facebook. Deutsche Telekom is 32% owned by the government and has received backing for this project for potentially giving customers more options. In August, the company launched a service dubbed Email Made in Germany that encrypts email and sends traffic exclusively through domestic servers.
It's time to get even more paranoid because there's a new Firefox plugin from Mozilla called Lightbeam that gives you a visualization of which sites are tracking your browser history and how those sites are connected. Now, the Lightbeam plugin is based on another Firefox add-on called Collusion. If you want to help out Mozilla, you can share your data with the Lightbeam database to help create a bigger picture of how different parts of the web are connected.
Twitter announced it will offer 70 million shares of stock at $17 to $20 U.S. per share when it goes public. The initial public offering will raise between $1.2 billion and $1.6 billion. A price of $28 to $30 had been expected, but with fewer shares. So the overall amount being raised pretty much remains in line with what folks thought it would be. Twitter will now pack up its wagon, head out for its IPO roadshow, where no doubt Dick Costolo will demonstrate Twitter in song and dance and puppets.
Chariots. So many chariots. Samsung posted record quarterly earnings yesterday, thanks to a rebound in its semiconductor business that offset a softening demand in the smartphone market. The company posted an operating profit of 10.2 trillion won, or $9.6 billion, for the three-month period ending in September, which is a 26% increase over the year-ago period and a 7% rise from the previous quarter, and recorded overall sales of 5.1 trillion won for the quarter.
Amazon posted its quarterly financials yesterday and reported a net quarterly loss of $41 million. However, sales were greater than $17 billion, which is a 24% improvement compared to last year at the same time. This sales figure was beyond analysts' expectations, so despite the net loss, Amazon shares jumped 10% on the opening of trading this morning. Analysts from at least 15 brokerages have raised price targets on Amazon shares.
He didn't lose as much as we thought. Buy your stock. Comcast and HBO have inched just a little closer to letting you get HBO without a cable subscription. Broadband Reports had a source, and GigaOm dug up some actual marketing materials that show Comcast offering subscribers 25 megabit per second internet, basic TV channels, mostly local, Comcast StreamPix, which is kind of their Netflix competitor, and HBO, all for $40 a month for the first year. After 12 months, the price goes up to around $70, though.
AT&T reported third quarter profit that exceeded analyst estimates. Earnings climbed to 66% a share, 66 cents, not percent. Analysts had projected 65 on average, according to data compiled by Bloomberg. Sales rose 2.2% to $32.2 billion, which is in line with the average estimate. Its fourth generation LTE wireless network and its U-verse fiber optic system are helping fuel growth. That's according to Chief Executive Officer Randall Stephenson. The company added 363,000 contract wireless customers in the period, compared to 151,000 a year ago.
PHP.net discovered Thursday that two of its servers had been compromised to host JavaScript malware delivering the Tepfer Trojan. The organization, which maintains the PHP programming language used by many, many websites, has moved the site to a new set of servers. Now, there's no evidence that any PHP code hosted on the site was compromised, but the group was concerned that an SSL certificate might have been compromised, so it disabled HTTPS access to PHP.net until a new certificate is issued and installed.
The Greater Manchester Police Department seized a 3D printer and printed components suspected to be a 3D plastic magazine and trigger for a gun. The parts are now undergoing forensic examination to determine whether the parts can make a working firearm. However, a Verge user by the name of Theobald02 saw the images of the seized printed parts and said they look like parts to upgrade the 3D printer that the police seized. The Greater Manchester PD told The Verge it's going to continue its forensic examination.
Yeah, do a forensic examination on this. Oh, no. Is that an organic human? Yeah, it's just silly. Let's take a break and thank our first sponsor for today's show, Shutterstock.com, where you can find the perfect image or video for whatever creative project you're working on. They have 28 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and video clips, and the collection is growing all the time. Many contributors to Shutterstock are pros, professional photographers, professional artists, and Shutterstock reviews each and every image individually for content and quality before adding it to its library. But that doesn't slow them down. They're adding 20,000 images every day, so you're going to find something that you like. You can choose individual image packs or a monthly subscription for the best deal. That standard subscription comes with 25 images a day. You can barely go through that. And you can download any image in any size, pay only one price, share them with the light box so that folks can see what you're collecting, or you can just say, I think these are the three or four I might need. I want to choose from them later. Try out their award-winning iPad app, too. You can search on the go and use it to display images during presentations if you want. Shutterstock is a global marketplace. They have multilingual customer service in more than a dozen international countries and full-time customer support throughout the week. I'm always finding interesting stuff if I need to show how tired I am, for instance. Did you just search on tired?
Yeah.
Jason? Look at that. Those are some tired people. That's it. You can search by emotion. You can search by mood. When I made my book trailer, I needed to find a picture of somebody who's angry. I just typed in angry, and I got all these pictures of angry people and these videos of angry people. Try it out today. Go to Shutterstock.com. No credit card needed. Just start an account. Begin using Shutterstock to help imagine what your next project could be like. Save those images to a lightbox to review later. Once you decide to purchase, use this offer code TNT1013, and new accounts will receive 25% off any package. That's Shutterstock.com for 25% off new accounts. Use that offer code TNT1013, and we thank Shutterstock for their support of Tech News Today. Joining us now, fresh off the successful launch of a brand new pineapple, Mr. Darren Kitchen back on the show. We missed you, Darren.
Dude, it's so good to be here. You have no idea how much work it was and how much how happy I am to have that behind me and into the next phase. So, yes, giving birth to a pineapple, not as easy as it sounds.
Ooh, prickly, but successful, right?
Yes, very happy. It's like a real thing. Look, you've got a friend that's an OEM. It's in a box and everything.
Whoa. Man, you guys are so it's fancy real. Now with that box. It's awesome.
I know.
Well, let's start off talk a little bit about Microsoft. As we heard, their revenue was great. Let me explain a little bit about this devices and consumer versus commercial split up. in case you don't know. Devices and consumer is licensing, hardware, and other. So things like Windows Store, things like Office 365, that goes in the other. The licensing part, that's the one that, you know, sells Windows to the OEMs. They put it on the machines when they sell them in the stores. Comes with Windows, right? Fell 22% on the decline of Windows and Office non-sub sales. So that seems likely, right? PC market's declining. You're going to see a decline there. Hardware was up 37%. They doubled Microsoft Surface sales. Now, they had to do a lot of price cutting to get there, but we're talking about revenue here. Xbox 360 also selling really well for Microsoft still. And the other part, that's your ads and your subscriptions, up 17%, 47% growth in ads. They point out Bing has 18% of the market share. Xbox Live, Office 365 transactions grew 25%. Now, the commercial side is where they made the big gains. Software sales, Skype, Enterprise, Azure, that sort of thing. Licensing there, licensing to the big enterprises, large companies, up 7%. SharePoint, Exchange, Link, all in double-digit growth. Other part was up 28%. That's your cloud revenue. Cloud revenue was up 103%, and Office 365 and Azure subscriptions in triple digit increases. Again, that's Office 365 for enterprises, not Office 365 for consumers. They also released the numbers under the old way of breaking them out. That showed a couple of things that these earlier numbers didn't, that showed that Xbox and Windows Phone are very seasonal. And so you're going to see a lot more variation there, where the new way of breaking it out sort of hides those things. And Bing is a money pit. That thing's just costing money like crazy, even though it is growing. So they're banking on Bing finally paying off in the future sometime, or maybe driving people into spending money in other parts of Microsoft. Darren, hearing all of this, what does it sound like to you the future of Microsoft is?
Kind of like a hybrid of Google and Apple, the two companies that I would say it seems like they most envy, you know, becoming their own hardware supplier. They've got the ecosystem, throw in some more cloud. Everybody loves that stuff. So yeah, that's kind of the direction that I see them going. And, I mean, that's really the way that the industry is going as we see the decline of the PC.
Yeah, I mean, you look at it. You look at these. The big increases are all on the commercial side. It's all mm-hmm. in the enterprise, and yet Microsoft is out there continuing to say we're a devices and services committee. We're a company.
How long is Bing going to stay around? It seems like that would be a great thing to dump, right? It's nowhere close to being able to compete with what Google has on offering.
Well, they got to play the long game on that, though. Like the seriously long game. Because if it does pay off, it could be huge.
They've seriously been playing the long game with Bing and search. Before that, what was MSN search? And before that, whatever they wanted to brand it. The fact that they still power Yahoo, and Yahoo's reinvigorated with Marissa Mayer. So maybe that could be a longer-term game, that is, maybe within 5 years. Because Google seems to be doing enough steps where they're becoming strange. We talked about that, the test yesterday about banner ads. And they've done all of this Google Plus sign-in stuff you have to do with Google for the most part. It could be annoying customers to the point where sometime they go, I have to go somewhere else. And if Bing is powering that, maybe Microsoft wins there. But when it comes to Office and 365 working on the enterprise, we every time we talk about Google Docs and all the free options out there, we get lots of emails from people saying, I use Office all the time at work. We can't get rid of it. And I think because of that, the enterprise stuff is actually very, very important, because if you're used to using Office 365 at work, when you go home and if you try to do the work some more, keep working on what you're doing, you probably want to have a compatible version of that. So you might start seeing, I don't want to say like a halo effect, but the idea that it'll bleed into your personal life. You go, oh, yeah, I could subscribe to this on my own too. I already know Office 365. Why would I bother learning Google Docs and Office 365 when I can just learn one thing?
I think this, the idea of Bing being a sort of a loss leader is what's at play here. They see that as a place to sell advertising, first of all. That's one of the things that's boosting that. It's a place to learn analytics, as Iaz is talking about, and how people behave. And it's a feature that they can include in their tablets. But all of that is on that devices and consumer licensing side. It's not on the commercial side, which is where the money is. So it just makes me wonder if maybe not even with the intention of doing it, but just to clarify the picture, they're saying, let's make the positive side of the business that we know is going to continue to make money, the Microsoft as IBM side of the business, separate from the riskier consumer side of the business so we can get a clear picture of whether we actually need to dump that side of the business at some point. I mean, you could see Microsoft divest itself of that maybe 5 or 10 years down the road if they can't make it work.
Isn't that the only reason that you split things up? I mean, I'm sure there's other, like, you know, accounting incentives, but to me, it's like that's the only reason you do that is because you're going to chop a limb off.
Yeah, exactly. Well, or you're going to chop all your limbs off if you're BlackBerry or somebody like that, sadly.
Well, then they'd be Microsoft Bob.
One way to avoid the fate of Microsoft Bob is to sell ads. But yeah. If you're a popular service that hasn't sold ads, sometimes that is risky, huh, Sarah?
Yes, indeed. However, Instagram is getting ads. It is more clear than ever exactly how it's going to look. Actually, the company itself is showing off some sample ads. They put them up in a blog post yesterday that represents what we should expect from ads on the platform. So the team, of course, is trying to reassure people beforehand that the photo and video ads would be creative and engaging, also relevant, tailored to your interests based on information about what you do on Instagram and Facebook. So pay more attention than ever to the things that you like and things that you comment on in the Facebook, Instagram universe, because that will sort of help drive what ads are targeted to you. The company also says the program's going to roll out slowly. They say we know that not all ads will be of interest. You, as a user, have the option of hiding an ad if you don't like it. They're also curating some ads with early stage partners, big companies like Adidas, Burberry, GE, and then, you know, just kind of seeing what sticks. There's a good Levi's example in some of the ads that Instagram put up just to kind of get people's first reactions. And it's kind of, you know, it's like a road trip type of a story. There will be a sponsored label in the upper right-hand corner. It's, you know, impossible to miss. If you don't like the ad shown, you just click the dot, dot, dot button below. You get rid of it. It goes away forever. It's very much like you would hide something on Facebook. And then Instagram also is giving people the option of providing feedback about what you didn't like about it. You know, when I look at these ads, I have to say, and of course, Instagram is only going to highlight stuff that they think looks pretty good and makes a lot of sense and won't annoy people and they're nice photos. But my initial reaction is, yeah, you know, I don't hate this stuff. I like a good photo. I'm not sure I really mind where it comes from. And you can sort of liken it to a, hey, the first 10 pages of my favorite fashion magazine have some really great ads. I mean, that's part of the reason I buy it at this point. It's sort of this beautiful, fashion-y type of a thing. Instagram feels the same way to me. Darren, do you think that Instagram can manage adding ads and not diminishing the user experience?
No, I don't think it's going to diminish the user experience at all if they bring in the right clients to do this appropriately. I mean, if it's just a big McDonald's logo next to fries, I don't know. I mean, that's probably going to make me want fries regardless, but I'm still going to be pissed off that you, like, brain hacked me that way. I feel like Instagram really lends itself towards, like, lifestyle brands. You know, it's really good talking about Adidas. I mean, I could see a lot of potential for some really innovative ads. I mean, like you said, if you've ever gotten a fashion magazine, you may have even torn some of these pages out because they can be really creative and beautiful. And I feel like, if anything, Instagram and Pinterest are really the best suited for that kind of stuff. And looking forward, as, you know, as the world evolves and perhaps magazines are a thing of the past, these ads have to go somewhere, and this makes the most sense.
Definitely, like,
I think
percentage.
The key is to make sure that the advertisements are natural, that they don't seem like they're just forced in somehow. And that's what Instagram is trying to do, is to say, hey, these are just good looking pictures. And so far, the examples that I've seen are actually just really nice looking pictures. And you kind of have to think about it to know it's an ad and read the text. And to me, that seems like a good way to do it.
I definitely think it's a percentage game, right? So if you're going to go through a bunch of your friends' photos, if, like, you have something like 25% of it is ads, that's going to get annoying really fast. If it's maybe one out of every 20 images or something, that might be a little bit easier to handle. Because I'm going through Instagram, and a lot of my friends' photos are of all kinds of things. Like, you know, let's see, we got pictures of dogs with sleeping masks on, or taps from the local brewery around here. These things are kind of ads already for these companies. So if they're not too obtrusive,
yeah,
and they're shot well, that's the other thing. Visual interest is really key. I think what Darren is saying, if it's just flat out a McDonald's logo with fries, it's not interesting enough. And that's one of the things you like about Instagram is that you have these filters, you have a certain style when it comes to that. So if they're not going to adhere to Instagram style and it's too frequent, it will become very annoying very fast.
The funny thing is like I already follow what could possibly be targeted advertising. I mean, it's like I follow the National Geographic Instagram account. Well, yes, they're known for their beautiful photos. So business was made on that. But it's like that could easily be something that just sort of shows up. And I would like it just the same. And yeah, you tell a nice story. It seems like, I mean, it's the perfect place for great targeted advertising, honestly. Not every company's going to get it right, certainly. But I guess we'll have to see.
I think as long as it's subtle and, like, evokes an emotion, and I feel like you could actually have a lot of opportunity to get, like, you know, other people involved. I mean, you know, somebody likes your stuff, and then, you know, what if they're wearing Adidas and want to post an awesome photo of their Adidas? I mean, I can feel like if you're actually feeling like a part of a brand, there could be a lot of, you know, community in that, and that could be cool.
Are you being attacked by pineapples right now?
I might be.
Okay.
It's a little scared. Subtle.
Subtly.
Yes, we are funny. Those of you on the audio podcast, just move along. There's nothing to see here. Let's talk about Comcast and that 25 megabit per second internet package with HBO. So just in case you don't remember it from the news fuse, for $40 a month, you get 25 megabit per second internet, which is not bad. Local channels, it's going to vary by market, but roughly around 20 channels. HBO and StreamPix, which is Comcast movie service, which people have said it's pretty much the same movies you would get on almost any other service, but without anything extra, without any good exclusives at this point. Darren, what do you think? Is this a way forward for HBO versus Netflix?
Yes, in that, I mean, my gut reaction first was like, this is division of the internet. And no, it's not a tiered internet thing. It's more of like a paywall thing, except the paywall is tied in with, you know, previously only with you know, traditional cable. And this makes sense as, you know, we move forward and things become more, you know, just, you know, the streaming generation or whatever have you. It makes sense to bundle it there. HBO is doing what they need to do to kind of maintain their cool, like, oh, it's exclusive, you have to be a part of our package thing. And at the same time, grow, you know, their subscriber base. And as their subscriber base goes more online streaming, it's the only way to. I feel like once you've saturated that market and once you've gone to every ISP and not just the cable ones like your Comcasts and Cox and Time Warners, but you also make your way into your DSL providers like your AT&Ts and whatnot. At a certain point, I have a feeling HBO will open up to everyone just like Netflix.
I mean, this is similar to one of the hacks we've talked about on Frame Rate is to buy an old broken Dish receiver so you can get the card, call for a self-install of Dish, subscribe to the basic package on HBO, which I think is just around $40 a month, and then you can get HBO Go, right? Because you have an active account, and Dish doesn't care whether you actually turn on the device or not. This is a lot easier than that. And Ayaz, don't you do something? So don't you get local channels with your internet from Comcast already?
Yeah, right now, because if they want to make sure I'm a paid subscriber, it's cheaper for me to have television with internet at the crazy speeds I get. I get like 50 down and I think 25 up, which I don't think I've actually ever gotten 25 up, but that's the claim. But it was way cheaper. I actually called them up and I was saying, I just want the internet only package. They said, it would be cheaper if you did this, you know? And I was like, okay, I will go ahead with that. This idea that they want to potentially get people to get HBO on top of the basic package, that to me is very intriguing. It seems like a really good test to see if enough people do this, if HBO looks at the numbers and say, wait a second, this money is worthwhile. We can actually make this work. I don't see this breaking out. I don't see this HBO breaking down for a long time, maybe another couple of years before we actually get to be able to go to HBO directly or say to our ISPs, hey, here is another $15. Just give me HBO on top of it. Because at that point, you're talking about being able to get specific channels. So HBO or Showtime or any of those things. Unbundling seems like it's a far way away.
Sarah, you're a cord cutter.
Yeah, I am.
Would this uncut your cord? If you're like, well, wait a minute, for $40 a month, you know, I could actually get HBO Go. And access. You're going to get access to Fox and ABC and, you know, the big broadcast networks here.
Yeah.
As well.
So I think because I am a cord cutter, it's one of these things where it's like, well, you'd have to lure me back some other way. I think the only way that I would go ahead with this would be a sort of a fluke situation like Ayaz has, where it ends up being cheaper to get cable, but it's really not because he wants the cable. It's just because it's like, okay, I'll just pay less that for more features. That doesn't make a lot of sense, Comcast. I can get network TV with my over-the-air antenna, or, you know, I subscribe to Hulu Plus, and that's $10 a month, not even. So it's like, yes, I think it makes perfect sense to say, hey, you want HBO, right? Well, let's just have this as, you know, the little icing on the cake of a more basic package rather than the crazy one where you get all these channels that you're just never going to use, this super bloated thing. But you really have to want HBO, and a lot of people do, but a lot of people have just simply gotten used to not having cable. I mean, it's not even something that ever crossed my mind. It's not a conversation I'm having with myself.
I think this is baby steps for HBO.
Yeah.
To say, we would like to do this. We don't want to piss off our MSOs because we get so much good marketing out of them and cross promotion. So let's figure out how to tiptoe, because we all know. I'm saying HBO is saying this to their cable operators. We all know where this is going to end up, but we all want to get there without having what happened to the music industry happen to us. So let's try a few things. And this is one of those things that they can try with virtually no risk to see what kind of uptake they get, you know, to see how it works. And it allows them to then take another step later to say, what if HBO is the only service you get with your internet subscription, which HBO has said they would like to do? So I think this is a clear indication that they're tentatively experimenting with that idea. Let's thank our other sponsor for today's show, RingCentral. We do everything in the cloud, and we love our cloud-based phone system, RingCentral. We tell the story all the time about how Russell's famous now because of this story, our IT guy who recommended RingCentral, because we didn't want to invest in a PBX system and have to install the hardware and maintain it. And RingCentral allows you to just put the phones on the desk. You can customize your call handling, get your voicemail through your email, get your fax messages on your smartphones. RingCentral will also give you your own auto receptionist. It's like a robot receptionist. Greets your callers, announces employees, department extensions, get calls after hours, no problem. RingCentral will route your calls to your smartphone's phone service center or voicemail. Have clients on hold. You can type a message in real time, have it translated from text to speech, and delivered to your caller while they wait. It's a much more personal touch. RingCentral offers all-inclusive pricing for as low as $20 a month per user, and you can start right now. Don't wait. Get a 30-day risk-free trial. And we have a special offer for our listeners. When you buy one desk phone, you get a second phone free, up to 20 phones. So call this number designated for our listeners, 800-543-9980. That's 800-543-9980. Once again, 800-543-9980. Or you can also go to ringcentral.com and use promo code TWIT. That's ringcentral.com, promo code TWIT. And we thank them for their support of Tech News Today. All right, we got T-Mobile. And their offer for 200 megabytes monthly free data. We've been kicking this around for a couple of days. What have we learned, Ayaz?
Yeah, so eWeek's got an article up. They talked to a bunch of analysts about T-Mobile's new tablet deal and saying how it could hurt AT&T. If you're unfamiliar with this, T-Mobile announced that it's going to sell the iPad and offer all tablets in its portfolio with monthly payment plans with no money down. So you can pay something like, I think it's like $16 a month for 2 years to get a Nexus 7, you obviously end up paying more than you would if you just got it, if you bought it outright. T-Mobile is also going to accept any device for trade-ins for the cost of a T-Mobile tablet. They're also offering all tablet users 200 megabytes of free data, whether they're T-Mobile subscribers or not. So if your tablet can use T-Mobile's, if it has the radios for T-Mobile's signals, you'll be able to get 200 megabytes for free. And if you're a subscriber, you get an extra 200 megabytes for free. When it comes to the analysts, this was from Eric Costa, an analyst at Technology Business Research. He told eWeek, this is going to be a big hit for AT&T over the next few quarters unless it comes out with a similar free tablet data offering. And Carolina Milanesi, a Gartner Research VP, said, I think that T-Mobile's tactics will put pressure on the big guys to review their multi-device plans. Darren, do you see any of the other big guys actually offering free data like T-Mobile?
The only way that it could potentially is perhaps Sprint, who offered free data with the original Kindle. But it seems like I would love to see all of them follow suit on this. I don't know if they can all afford to. I mean, this might be just a short play for T-Mobile, which makes me really want to get in on this and hopefully be grandfathered. Because that's a lot of data. I mean, it doesn't seem like much when you consider like streaming, but you could get by for a month just using that as your phone with texting and web without graphics, no problem. So it's huge. I feel like this is going to make a big impact on T-Mobile, especially as they've refarmed their network. And, you know, you're talking about bringing devices over that support their frequencies. Well, they kind of have the standard frequencies that most devices have now. So it's going to be a huge win for them.
Kind of just depends on your coverage, right? I mean, this all looks great. If you're in an area where T-Mobile isn't strong, you might be like, wish it was better because then I'd get this great deal. yeah, I mean, exactly. I feel like there are so many. It's really hard to convince somebody, unless you have a terrible experience, it's hard to convince somebody to switch carriers, even when there are great deals, because everybody's got these complicated tiers of subscribership and it's one of those things where you're like, oh, God, do I really want to spend all this time and figure out what my best option is? I think if you were getting into the tablet space for the first time, this is it's a perfect option. I think it's a little different to say, oh, people are going to jump off of AT&T for something like T-Mobile, because T-Mobile is just such a smaller network. And there are coverage issues, I know, because I know people who like the idea of being away from, let's say, AT&T or Verizon just because they're so big and so evil. But they don't switch. Myself included, because it's just more convenient not to.
Might be best for the device makers, right? Because somebody like me who doesn't have a tablet with a plan may look at a tablet with LTE capability and decide, oh, well, I don't have to get like caught up in a contract, but maybe I will buy pay a little bit more for the device with the LTE radio because I can use that T-Mobile thing every once in a while. Versus right now, I always buy Wi-Fi only devices because I'm just like, you know what? I just don't want to deal. I can tether my phone. I'm not going to bother with having to pay extra and then pay for a plan and a contract and all of that sort of thing. I'm not sure that it's going to make me spend any more money on T-Mobile, though. Although that's always, it's the buffet mentality, right? They figure, oh, we'll get you in with 200 megabytes and then someday you'll be like, oh, but I need more and you'll pay. So
it's like
I imagine they've run the numbers.
Yeah, the first 200 megabytes are free. I think my major complaints about T-Mobile, about its coverage area and its speeds necessarily, wouldn't be something you'd complain about if you had 200 megabytes for free. Like, okay, this is free. It kind of works. So that's okay. What did you expect for free?
What are you going to do with 200 megabytes? Read a story?
No, you can download a Kindle with 200 megabytes. Come on.
John LeGarry, he spelled it out. Something like 500 posts on Facebook, a bunch of tweets, emails. You can do a lot of... you're not going to be taking tons of photos with your Nokia, you know, 41 megapixel camera.
Yeah,
you're not
uploading
it. I suppose you're right.
You can do some web surfing. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, no,
check your
I
Instagram ads.
Here's what he says: 2,500 emails.
I'm obviously consuming too much.
3,400 tweets, or post 540 times to Facebook. That's what John.
Oh God.
So that's
awesome.
In a month.
For the times you don't have Wi-Fi, I don't.
When you don't have Wi-Fi, right.
Sure. Exactly. Yeah, yeah. If you have to check something, who's going to say no to 200 megabytes?
Right. You might use it to look up articles on Wikipedia, although those might not be as good as they used to be. Interesting article today on Technology Review.
Very interesting article. And it's sort of chronicles just the history of how Wikipedia came to be and how it's become really a crutch that many people use as the basis for facts. You know, you have to write a school paper. You need to know some trivia. You have to know when something started and ended. Wikipedia, even though it's obviously moderated by a community and not necessarily fact, has really become a tool that we all depend on, many of us anyway. Every month, 10 billion pages are viewed on the English version of Wikipedia alone. But obviously the workforce is volunteers. And what's interesting that Technology Review points out is that workforce is shrinking. In fact, it has declined by more than a third since 2007. It's still shrinking. And just as far as demographics go, of those editing community, roughly 90% are male. So you end up getting what could be seen as a pretty skewed version of the kinds of articles that get fleshed out, that obviously somebody took a lot of care to make sure that were clear and full of good information. versus maybe other articles. We say, why wouldn't this have a Wikipedia page? Well, that might have something to do with it. Wikipedia launched in 2001. Obviously, it was intended to be an information source. And by the end of that first year, it went from basically a handful of articles to over 20,000 in 18 languages. By 2003, founder Jimmy Wales had formed the Wikimedia Foundation to operate the servers and software that run Wikipedia, raise money to support them. So it's a bit of a nonprofit type of a thing. But the hierarchy, which is a small group of administrators, these are the people who can basically, they basically have final say on any article. They can delete articles, which anybody who's familiar with Wikipedia knows you can't just do that because you want to. They can temporarily ban other editors. There are 635 active admins on the English Wikipedia. However, of the people who are contributing to it, and this is the English language Wikipedia again, that number peaked in 2007 at about 51,000 active editors and has been declining. Only 31,000 people over the summer were considered active editors. The problem with this, of course, is not really so much that, oh, fewer people are contributing to Wikipedia. It's that so many people still consider Wikipedia as a place where facts are written down. And if you have fewer of those people, many of them male, and people just, I don't know, they've again, these are volunteers, they're unpaid, going on to do other things. What's that going to do for what's considered an information source? What do you think, Darren?
Well, I mean, you look at the growth and, you know, of contributors and also the articles, and, well, obviously there's a huge influx at the time where, you know, the library grows, but at a certain point, how many more do you need to maintain, and how many more? I mean, there will continue to be articles until the end of time. I'm not saying that we don't need editors, but I don't see this as like the fall of Wikipedia. And I actually consider Wikipedia probably one of the greatest examples of open source ever. I mean, Mozilla's Firefox is probably the only other brand I can think of that's as successful, and they're actually ad supported in some ways. Not saying I want to see this, but I love Wikipedia so much that I would not mind if it was done properly to see an ad-supported Wikipedia if it came to it. And if it did, wow, they'd be just fine. I mean, how many times have you Googled something and it's the first result?
I don't know, though. If you read this article, money doesn't seem to be their issue. Gardner has done a great job bringing in the money. And there's no indication that if we had more money, we could do this and that. It's all about the culture.
Yeah.
It's all about the fact that
you could hire the talent.
Yeah, but then you still have to change the culture, right? You're basically changing the entire culture to say it's no longer volunteer run. I mean, what you're saying is bring Nupedia back and have it be run centrally. The problem they're having is that, like any community, it's become tribal, and mm-hmm. they've created their own rules and circled the wagons against outsiders, and it's really hard for a newbie to break in. And that visual editor is a perfect example. They wanted to do something that made it easy for newbies, and I guarantee you that one of the reasons the existing editors are resisting it is they're like, no, we shouldn't make it easy. They should learn. They should pay their dues like we did and learn how the system works. And that's the cultural bias that they're trying to overcome here. It's a fascinating read.
Oh, no, I'm not discounting that it's absolutely Lord of the Flies. In fact, Jason Scott has a wonderful talk on Wikipedia. It's from 2007, but it's still absolutely relevant today. So I see what you're saying about it being like, you know, insular, but I don't know. I get scared whenever I think about just even the thought of Wikipedia waning, because I feel like it's such a valuable asset to humanity. So go
and
download
it. Sue Gardner doesn't think it's in danger of waning, but she thinks they need to act now so that it doesn't wane in the future. And you can see on the fringes some articles that just aren't getting the attention that they should have. And if you're not going to bring in new blood, it's not going to last forever. And that's the problem they're facing. Let's finish up with a honeypot. Tasty honeypot.
This is just for Darren. Yes, thanks to Captain Kipper and our subreddit who actually brought this to my attention. So it looks like a file sharing website was actually a pirate honeypot. It was operating for 12 months. Fell in it by the name or the tag, username, WDF. It was a former senior staff member at W Junction. He says in the last 12 months since his forum uploadertalk.com went online, he's been grabbing information about uploaders and file hosts. He said he suckered in a bunch of users and announced the acquisition of his site, by a U.S.-based anti-piracy company called Nuke Piracy LLC. Now, the site was set up with the aim of gathering confidential information on uploaders, file hosts, and web companies involved in the piracy ecosystem. And the forum attracted people who wanted to make money from uploading files to file hosting sites. Darren, do you think this this kind of story is going to have any impact on online piracy?
No, not at all. This has been going on since the beginning of days. I mean, you want to talk about an insular community. The wares scene has been going on ever since you could digitize anything and transmit it over the network. And this WDS guy, it actually warms my heart to see that not much has changed. It's still the same kind of trolling and FUD and immature hijinks in the wares scene that you've come to expect. And so I don't even, like, I read everything that I could about this, and I still can't make heads or tails of it, which means it's the same kind of like IRC banter you'd find in the proper channels.
Yeah, I love how he says, like, oh, I was just tricking you all into thinking that I was running a honeypot. I haven't been running a honeypot at all. Like, okay, either you are a massive troll or lying.
Probably both. He's a triple agent.
Yes. I wanted you to think that I was betraying you, that I was betraying you, but I was thinking that I was not betraying you. Aha! You fell for it.
What?
Yeah. Or his site got busted and he made a deal with some anti-piracy agency. Or who knows? I mean, spend enough time in IRC or forums or any community like this. And this is kind of commonplace and it's awesome.
I think it's probably just a good rule of thumb to assume that, you know, if you're active in some sort of a site or service that is involved in piracy, that somebody's probably paying attention to who you are and where you're from. Maybe it's the government, maybe it isn't, but in general, probably not the most anonymous place to hang out.
And why would you join a forum and actually look at this? I'm going to put in my real information as well. That's the other thing. It's like, I think you had a sense of distrust when you started going into these things.
Yeah.
But it seemed like an interesting like headline. You know, file sharing site was a year-long pirate honeypot. It's like, it's interesting.
I would never join any forum that would have me. Or something like that, I think Groucho Marx said. Let's go on to the randomizer. Straw poll today, heavily against bras. The tweeting bra lost 68%, 32%. Actually, it's a pretty compelling story, though. An Amtrak passenger was overhearing a conversation of former NSA director Michael Hayden with a reporter off the record, and started posting on Twitter about it. Now, he didn't really post any, like, horrible details here, but it was kind of funny. He's like, I'm surveilling the surveiller, and talking about how he sounded defensive, this and that. Eventually, Hayden came over to Tom Matzy, the guy who was posting on Twitter, after getting a phone call and saying, like, oh, hey, so you're posting about me. And they took a picture together. It all seemed to end amicably.
I think if you're talking, I think if you're talking off the record, but on an airplane, you kind of can't expect.
It was on a train.
Or on a train. Same difference. In an enclosed area with a lot of other people, you can't expect that what you're saying isn't going to spread somewhat, at least in this day and age. We're too connected nowadays.
Yes. Trains, planes, and automobiles, I love them. There's nowhere to run.
Even if you're hating. Don't be a hater.
Yeah, don't be hating on Hayden.
Let's see what's on the calendar.
The Stop Watching Us rally, which is against NSA surveillance, is happening tomorrow, Saturday, October 26th. Also starting tomorrow over in Berlin, TechCrunch Disrupt Europe kicks off, runs through the 29th. On Sunday, the Samsung Developers Conference begins, also runs through the 29th. And looking ahead to November 12th, BioShock Infinite is headed back to Rapture.
Excellent.
Excellent.
Do we have any emails, perhaps?
Incoming message.
Let's check. Yeah, we have one from Victor. He says, hey, TNT crew, about the YouTube music service, not that I or anyone I know would ever do this, but some companies block Pandora, Spotify, iTunes, Google Play Music, but don't block YouTube. And some people make playlists in YouTube of music and let them run all day on their PCs rather than consume their capped wireless bandwidth. Just a thought.
Some people are very clever, Victor, who's not some people, I'm sure, at all. That's an interesting way of going about it, getting around. All right. Well, thanks, everybody, for watching or listening. Thank you, Darren Kitchen, HAK5.org.
Yes,
you, what do you got going on post-pineapple launch?
Oh, gosh, post-pineapple launch. Well, Jerry was here talking about Cast AR, and we've got the whole fun series on Man in the Middle stuff coming up, so that's going to be fun. And, yeah, it is. It really is for me, post-pineapple. So, man, so exciting.
Good to have you back, man. We miss you.
Thanks.
All right, don't forget about our subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com, where you can vote on the stories that we're going to have on the show. Vote them up, vote them down, submit your own, all of that. Also, don't forget about our best of submissions, twit.tv/best of, where you can say, hey, I really like that moment in any show on Twit, Tech News Today or others, twit.tv/best of. You can email us, tnt@twit.tv, call us 260-TNT-SHOW, subscribe to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/technewstoday, and of course, subscribe to the podcast and get show notes at twit.tv/TNT. We will be back Monday with Pete Rojas as our guest. We'll see you then.